what does it mean to be German? Drinking beer, watching football, being on time? All joking aside, German identity is a fascinating and harrowing question which weaves itself through nearly all of German history. And believe it or not, there once was a time when it was cool to be German, when people, and even Germans, wanted to be German. Well over two centuries ago, Goethe and Schiller wanted to rally the youth of their era to recognize how great it can be to be German, to wear their Germanness with pride and to stop thinking that French was cool. And it goes without saying that the German soldiers in the First and Second World Wars were all too happy to be German. How, you might rightfully ask, could anyone want to be German? The food's underwhelming, the jokes are painful, and they only have had one good rock band in their entire collective history, Rammstein. I'm not here to answer that mysterious, fascinating question, although I do think that buzzwords like Bach and Beethoven have something to do with it, plus the beer and bread really are delicious. In fact, I don't even have to answer that question because there are millions of people far more qualified than I am to answer it. No one wanted to be German more than the Jews of Germany did. Many of them, in fact, wanted to be German so badly that they were even willing to give up their entire Jewish heritage and Jewish religion for the sake of doing so. This unmitigated drive to trade in Jewishness for Germanness culminated in the Romantic composer Felix Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn, though born a Jew, had himself baptized and fully assimilated into German society. One of the most famous and celebrated composers of his era, he composed music which eschewed Jewish or Yiddish influences and simply tried to sound, well, German. In 1743, Felix Mendelssohn's grandfather, Moses Mendelssohn, age 14, entered Berlin at the Rosenthaler Tor, the only gate in the city wall through which Jews and cattle were allowed to pass. Moses Mendelssohn is considered to be the first Jew to be a kind of German Jew. He grew up with Talmud, he grew up Orthodox, he grew up speaking Yiddish, but after crossing through with the Rosenthaler Gate, nothing was ever the same, both for him and for the Jews of Germany. By the end of his life, Moses was speaking fluent German and was best friends with German playwright Gotthold Ephraim Lessing. Though Moses would never have dreamed of converting to Christianity, it is telling that his grandson Felix, just two generations later, was all too eager to do so. Another Jew came to the gates of Berlin a few years ago. He represents a kind of inverted counterexample to Moses Mendelssohn. Hailing from Israel with his shofar in hand, Bart Semach came to Berlin not to make Judaism more German, but rather to make Germany more Jewish, particularly from a musical perspective. Unlike Felix Mendelssohn, who eliminated any Jewish influences from his music, Bart Semach has dared to loudly blow on his shofar amidst German orchestras playing Haydn and Schubert. Bart Semach is truly a rising star in the Jewish world. Only 23 years old, he has played French horn in some of the most prestigious orchestras in Germany, including the Westeastern Divan Orchestra, the Düsseldorf Symphony Orchestra, and the Staatskapelle Berlin. Born in Israel, Bar learned French horn under the tutelage of the principal horn player of the Israel Symphony Orchestra. He has played as soloist for the Israel Philharmonic, and he has played in the Israeli Opera. Currently based in Berlin, Bar has another instrument which he is becoming famous for playing. That is the shofar. A shofar is the horn of a ram normally played for specific Jewish religious ceremonies. It is typically thought that the shofar can play only one, two, or three notes, five tops. But Bar plays the shofar like no other, hitting all of the notes on the scale. Bar not only can play the shofar parts in the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, he also plays the shofar as, well, a normal musical instrument. Right before Rosh Hashanah this year, he is going to play the shofar for the Liberation Concert in Munich, which is in remembrance of the victims of the Holocaust and of October 7th. And he will be playing, next spring, shofar to the music of Mozart with the Berlin Symphony in the Berlin Harmonic Hall. Barr's mission is to show that the shofar can fit into the classical repertoire with as much grace and harmony as the clarinet or the violin. So Barr, welcome to the Schrift. Great to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's my honor. I am a listener of the Schrift for some time already. And I'm so curious to get interviewed also in this amazing podcast. Just saying that for me, The Shrift is not a regular podcast at all and speaks about so interesting stuff. It's really amazing. It's incredible.
That means so much for me to hear. Thank you. It's always great to when I can have fans also as my guests on The Shrift. If you want to write a review later on Apple Podcasts, you can, or any of my listeners out there. Okay, so actually, I was going through the introduction, your ears perked up specifically for this Liberation concert. Can you maybe say why that's so important?
Well, that's such an important concert because it celebrates the liberation from the concentration camps. The first concert was with 8 musicians from the orchestra of Auschwitz, which was then in the times built by Jewish people that played for the Nazis. And since that, it was, I mean, such a tradition to play in this place than in the original place when they played. Before 80 years, I will blow the shofar. That means a lot for me. And this year also with the remembrance of October 7th and not only of the Holocaust. And of course, with the amazing Jerusalem Symphony Orchestra and with the fabulous soloist of cello, Misha Maisky.
So the first concert was played by 8 musicians that played in the concentration camps.
Yes, it was played by a group of musicians that just liberated from the Auschwitz concentration camp orchestra.
Wow. But you said in the same place, but isn't the concert in Munich?
Yes, in Munich. I think the original concert was in this Sitotilien, as long as I know. Mm.
Okay, well, that's very special, right before Rosh Hashanah. I think everyone's a bit curious how you got into playing shofar as a musical instrument and not just as a kind of religious, kind of the way we always hear it at the synagogue.
So, that's a great question, and it has so much to do with my beloved grandfather. As I was just 17 years old, I played for the first time as a soloist with the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, and my grandparents came to listen to me, and I played the Mozart Horn Concerto, and my grandfather from other side was very passionate about shofar. I think that it was in his heart all of his life. The sound of shofar was just really staying in his ears since his very early childhood as a Hasid in Mea Shearim, in Yerushalayim. So just a few months later, I've reached the age of 18 and he gave me this special present, a huge and amazing Yemenite shofar, and told me that he gives it to me, so I will play on it with an orchestra like I'm doing with the horn and spread Jewish spirituality with the audience.
Is the shofar capable of this type of... I mean, is it meant to play all these notes? Like, is that asking too much for the shofar?
I don't feel so.
Yeah.
When I first took the shofar, it was the first thing I tried to do with him, because as a horn player, I I just saw the shofar as another horn. And when I blow the shofar, I'm feeling very special freedom, a sense of connection also with God. And the music just flows out of these instruments in amazing ways.
Do you think that the original shofar players in Israel, ancient Israel, could they also kind of play different melodies, or were they limited to,
I am sure that I am not the first one, not the last one, and I know that I'm just a continuation of a tradition. The shofar is a musical instrument, and not only in my eyes, also the halakha called the shofar a musical instrument that is being used for the special prayings. So it is the first instrument in the world. As one believes in the Bible, it's the first ever musical instrument played for Bnei Israel when Hashem blowed it for them.
There's German, and then there's German. And Mendelssohn did not have himself baptized, raised Christian, and married to the daughter of a Protestant preacher to write un-German music. Yet, when Richard Wagner heard Mendelssohn's music, he surely must have thought, "That's German music? That sounds German? I'll show you German music. I'll show you German." And he did. If I could sum up Wagner's music in one word, it would be German. And this, I believe, is exactly how Wagner wished his music would be received, as the embodiment of Germanness. And then, finally, there is Gustav Mahler. Mahler was born Jewish, but converted to Christianity later in life. In my opinion, Mahler combined the best of both worlds, writing supremely German music, which sounded like this, while never forgetting his Jewish Yiddish roots. I'd like to talk about Mendelssohn to start. We're going to talk about three composers, mm-hmm. which each have their own kind of German-Jewish angle, right? We have Mendelssohn, we have Wagner, and we have Mahler. In the Schrift lecture that I gave a while back, I sort of described Mendelssohn as like assimilating, didn't want to sound Jewish at all, right? Wanted to sound German. Wagner wanted to sound even more German and thought Mendelssohn didn't sound German enough and actually thought he sounded Jewish, or even though he was trying not to sound Jewish. And then Mahler, I said, sort of was open. He was maybe like Jethro, was open to Jewish influences, even though he had the German core to his music. Mendelssohn was, of course, he was born Jewish, but I think he was baptized later in life. He pretty much wanted, as I understand it, he wanted to leave Judaism behind. He didn't want to practice Judaism. He just wanted to be German. Would you agree with that?
I am absolutely agreeing with that. And this is different than Mahler. Mahler was actually a bit more Jewish connected. His father was Chazan, was a rabbi, and he was influenced by the melodies of the prayers in the synagogue. He was so influenced by this, and he composed his works in inspiration of the Jewish prayers melodies. But Mendelssohn didn't even got to hear these melodies. He was baptized and he wanted to leave the Judaism completely behind. I mean, when he's then composing Eliyahu later, Eliyahu, I say in Hebrew, he was not thinking exactly about Jewish Torah. It's more about a Christian belief. And, well, his music is amazing and it has nothing to do with Judaism, nothing.
You are listening to The Shrift, interview 17 with Bart Semach, principal horn player of the West Eastern Divan Orchestra, Yitro. Mendelssohn was extremely popular in his time. I think he was actually called like the Mozart of the 19th century or something. Like he, and I actually always felt like, I mean, I like Mendelssohn. I don't like him nearly as much as I would love Bach or Mozart or Beethoven. I mean, some of his pieces I really like, but why was he so popular? Like, why did people like him so much? I mean,
well,
what made him so good?
Wasn't the music of Mendelssohn a bit cheesy? I think in a time that the cheesy music were very welcomed.
Mm.
And in a way, he was coming from such a successful family, the Mendelssohn family, family of philosophers, of artists. They had such a voice in Germany. Everyone knew them. Although they were Jews, they were so successful. And then, I mean, speaking about the father of Mendelssohn, Abraham, he was not a Jew anymore. He also baptized into Protestant Christianity. So he is coming from a successful family. He had a fantastic childhood. Our Felix, he was also in the choir. So he learned a lot. He discovered the music of Bach. He learned how to create the music that the world needs now, let's say. It was so popular, yeah.
So, yeah, I would say Mendelssohn's music is like pretty easy to listen to. It's pretty maybe light, would you say, or pretty pleasant? Would you agree with that? Or maybe that's why he was popular?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
That's not the way that he wanted to get audiences in the concert. He just composed romantic music in a romantic era. Mm. That's it. He didn't try to overcome this romanticism with new ideas. Mm. He just used what he knew from his very, very great idols and transferred it into the romanticism in a way that everyone could love it and enjoy it. Yeah, but it's not very simple music. No.
Would you say that Mendelssohn's music is German, well, you already said it's not Jewish at all, but I guess, would you say it's German or just kind of European?
It's European. Mendelssohn worked so much in Italy. He was so popular there. And also in Germany, he just composed the music that everyone can enjoy. Mm.
But, and Mendelssohn, among musicians like yourself, he's very respected.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Speaking about assimilation, right? And the question if he's like assimilated himself to be German or to write German music. So, yes, of course. Absolutely. And this is the reason that then later some German Musikwissenschaftler hated him for this reason with the rise of the Third Reich. So many music professors talked about Mendelssohn is the worst ever because he's trying to assimilate and he's trying to hide his Judaism, which is the most dangerous category. But I'll just tell you that the first time that I played in Germany was as I have just reached the age of 18. And I joined the Moritzburg Festival Orchestra to play on the first seat the Mendelssohn Sommernachtstraum Nocturne, which is the huge horn solo. An amazing music. So have I assimilated myself also and wanted to make with Mendelssohn together a new German bar? I don't think so, because in terms of internationality, music is music, and Mendelssohn did a great job in just being a musician and not being a Jew. But unfortunately, people discovered later that he.
Yeah, I mean, just because you're Jewish and you're a musician doesn't mean you have to play Jewish music.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you're just a human being, so you can also convert and you can do whatever you want. At the end of the day, your music just sounds like your music. It's something special.
I recently learned that the band Kiss, this hard rock band, you know Kiss, right?
Yeah.
They're like 70s, like hair metal. And I learned that most of them were Jewish. And
really?
Some of them, yeah. Wow. I mean, they're like crazy, like painting their face with black, like just cult rock stars. Okay. No one ever says, oh, why don't you have where's the klezmer song or whatever, so.
Sure.
Anyway, it's a little unfair to Mendelssohn. Although Mendelssohn is the one we remember and know today, there was actually another German-Jewish composer of his era who was even more popular than Mendelssohn, and this was Giacomo Meyerbeer. He was born as Jacob Meyerbeer to a wealthy Berlin Jewish family. His mother, Amalie, or Malka, ran one of the most celebrated salons in the city. Unlike Mendelssohn and many other affluent Jews at the time, Meyerbeer never converted to Christianity, nor did his parents. In 1842, Meyerbeer was named by the Prussian king as general music director to the Berlin Opera. He is considered as the absolute master of the Grand Opera. We must understand that Meyerbeer was writing blockbuster operas, premiering in Paris, the cultural capital of the world. These operas were massive productions with full orchestras, special effects, and the glitziest opera singers of Europe. In Paris, circa 1840, he met the young composer Richard Wagner. He recognized Wagner's talent and gave him financial assistance. Wagner was living in poverty. Even though Wagner owed both his life and his future musical success to Meyerbeer, he secretly despised him. While Meyerbeer remained alive, Wagner publicly praised his work, calling him a genius and the prophet of a new world. Shortly after his death, however, Wagner would publish his true feelings about Meyerbeer and, to a lesser extent, Mendelssohn. The infamous book was called Jewishness in Music, understood by at least one scholar to be, quote, the second most anti-Semitic book ever written after Hitler's Mein Kampf. Wagner's most basic criticism of Jewish composers was that they could only imitate creativity. They could only reproduce what had already been made, but could not create anything new and meaningful from the heart. So Wagner, I know Wagner did not like Mendelssohn.
Well, I think when speaking about Wagner and Mendelssohn, we should also speak about Giacomo Meyerbeer, which was a very important composer and so popular, maybe even more popular than Mendelssohn at the time. Well, they were all in contact, and Meyerbeer was the richest from all. Of course, Wagner was a poor guy, poor composer. Mendelssohn was rich, but Meyerbeer was completely different league. He was so successful, so the people are saying some...
He was Jewish.
He was Jewish, absolutely. He was not converted. He was Jewish. He wrote 200 operas. He's coming from a Jewish family, and the way he helped Wagner is incredibly. You won't believe it, but he supported him financially so he could, you know, be alive at all, yeah? And I don't want to do any parallels here, but let's just speak again about Wagner as a human being. Or not again, sorry. Wagner was supported by Meyerbeer, a Jew, to success in his career. And Hitler was also supported by Jews to success in his career as an artist. So, in a way...
When Hitler was in Vienna, you mean?
Yes, exactly. And in a way, then, few years later, both went crazy against Jews. And Wagner just waited until Meyerbeer will die to publish this this disgusting article about the Jewish in music with prouding of his name also. I mean, the first time Wagner wrote this article was without his name because the composer was still alive, and then when he was dead, so Wagner wrote it proudly in his name. Yeah. He waited till Mendelssohn will die and also till Meyerbeer will die, and then he just published the article in his name, proud of saying that Jewish music is disgusting, and he learned everything from Meyerbeer and from Mendelssohn. Both supported him financially, Meyerbeer very, very much, but he learned from both how to compose and how to create amazing music, And of course, that later in the years that Wagner was already a successful composer, nobody knew anything about Meyerbeer, because he took care that the people will hate Meyerbeer for his disgusting Jewish music, let's say.
Wow. Thus wrote Wagner. But it was reserved for the Jew to appear as an anti-artist, whose being is curdled into an unrecognizable, inharmonious, and unsavory flood of nonsense and twaddle. The Jew, in his ceaseless endeavors to act as though he himself were a creator, lacks absolutely all warmth of real feeling and genuine artistic inspiration. Unquote. So, what I don't understand is, like, here you have Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer writing music that you just said sounds very European. Doesn't sound Jewish at all.
No.
Why did Mahler, and it's very popular, everyone likes it. Why did Wagner... why did he, I guess, hate this music so much or criticize it so much? And why did he think it sounded Jewish or not German if you just said it didn't sound Jewish?
Of course he didn't hate this music. Of course he doesn't think these great, disgusting thoughts. He loved this music. He was inspired by Mendelssohn. He was inspired by Meyerbeer. Once you need to understand that Wagner wanted to be successful. And he did it in a very similar way to the way that the conductors and Musikwissenschaftler wanted to be successful in the time of Third Reich. They just grew antisemitism to get the Jews out of the picture, because Jewish people was very, very successful. So once you are shaming the Jews, you have place for yourself to enter the stage. And Wagner liked the music of Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer. He just tried to burn it so the people will like his music. It's so typical, and we have it in philosophy nonstop. This is the worst type ever of being a human being. But this is Wagner, this is what he has done.
So Wagner's strategy was, I want to be successful, so I'm going to make Mendelssohn, I'm just going to make Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer, like, use their Jewishness to destroy their reputation and destroy their music's reputation.
Of course, on the one side, because antisemitism was popular, and on the other side, because he imitated them. And if they will stay popular, if they would stay popular, so people would understand that he imitating them, and they won't be having any success. When Wagner first arrived to Leipzig, or just wrote a letter to Mendelssohn, to Felix Bartholdy, so he sent him his first symphony in C and told him, "My dear, amazing Mendelssohn, I would be so happy if you could have a look on my sketch of the first symphony." You know, this kind of way. And it was not even a good symphony. But the way he spoke to Mendelssohn made Mendelssohn wanting to help him and to get him a stage to play his pieces. And yeah, once then Mendelssohn died, and Wagner immediately, 3 years later, publishing the article, the disgusting
Judaism
article. Exactly.
Judentum
in der Musik.
In der Musik. Judaism in music. Okay, but like what were Wagner's arguments against this music? Like, he obviously didn't just say, "Oh, this is bad." What was his accusations?
He had fantastic arguments. He's speaking about the way you can hear this music is assimilating something else. He's speaking about the music is something completely wrong in his harmony. The harmony is not correct. The way of using harmonies is cheesy, is cheap. He uses all of these all of these examples to show how this music is bad.
But didn't he also accuse it of being Jewish, or like only a Jew could write? What was the Jewish
only a Jew can write such a bad music, because he's trying to be German. And once you are trying to be German, you are doing the worst for yourself, you are doing the worst for Germany. You have to be, yeah, not burned, but in a way. I mean, Wagner wrote very anti-Semitic thing in the end of this article, that the solution of the Jewish people in the Jewish music is just to go away. In German, it's written with other words which are even worse.
Jewishness and music, both Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer came under attack. Wagner wrote, quote, "Mendelssohn was the first to show that a Jew can have the gift of making a pleasant musical noise. That is why his successes were so great and so boundless. Meyer's operatic works show us real life only from its outside. This dazzling show will last until we are sated with it. As soon as we take it strictly to task for what it tells us, we shall feel we are deceived." Talk for a minute about Wagner's music. Mm-hmm. If I'm being honest, I actually am very impressed by Wagner's music, because I really, and I feel a bit guilty saying that as a Jew, you know, but I find, first of all, it really sounds like no other music I've ever heard before. Was there anything special or new about Wagner?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So much. Let's begin with his family too. He's coming from a family which inspired him so much about drama, about theater, and just grow up in the atmosphere of more like theater and less music, and beginning to combine everything together was his life mission to create Gesamtkunstwerk, to make the connection between all kind of arts. And okay, he's maybe not the first one to do it. Verdi did it also fantastic before, and Wagner just made it so unique in a way. He has this dark sound, something that you could say today or consider as German, because this is the way that he approached it. It was the Wagner chose to make his music German, and he absolutely succeeded. And why he did it, the music is German, and it's very special. Using of dark sound, and a special usage of the horns, as a horn player I know it, especially of a new kind of horn, the Wagner tuba. He was inventing a completely new instrument from the sketches. He made up the Wagner tuba, a special horn that made a sound which is a little bit simulating with the tenor horn, closer to the trombones, and the horns in the orchestra are using this while playing music of Wagner. You have sometimes in the operas of him four Wagner horns behind the four horns. So, such an incredible music, very unique composer, also special usage of the instrument in the orchestra, like giving the bass clarinet amazing solos, and some heroic structure of the music that no one else trusted to compose, like him, having the famous Siegfried call. Thank you. having such great heroic phrases, made completely new voice in the opera scene.
Wagner's anti-Semitism was not limited just to Jewish composers. His attack was all-encompassing. His essential argument was that Jews cannot be Germans. They can merely cleverly pretend to be so. In a classic anti-Semitic trope, Wagner argued that Jews can't really speak German as a mother tongue. Instead, they speak German imitatively, but their Jewishness somehow crops up in the speech and corrupts the German language's purity and essence. Wagner writes, "By far more weighty, nay, of quite decisive weight for our inquiry, is the effect the Jew produces on us through his speech. And this is the essential point at which to sound the Jewish influence upon music. The Jew speaks the language of the nation in which he dwells from generation to generation, but he speaks it always as an alien. The Jew talks the modern European languages merely as learnt, and not as mother tongues." Would you say that Wagner's music sounds German, and if so, how?
Yeah, in a way, he created this German music. He created this German nationality in his music. Parsifal is the most nationalistic opera that have ever been written from the German composers, and he will to show with this opera what is a German proudness? What does it mean to have this purity of German land, only of Germans? Diving into the music, you can understand it. But better, you just see how the Nazis used this opera to build up on it so much of their ideology, especially speaking about the purity of Germans.
I often ask because I also think that Wagner's music sounds German. I'm not exactly sure what that means, to sound German, but it just, to me, sounds German. And I always try to figure out, like, what Wagner did. Obviously, Parsifal, like, the subject of the opera is, of course, nationalistic, but in the music itself, like, what he's doing that it has this, like, German sound.
It's a manner of the language, and using one's language can really give so much to the music. And Wagner was not completely wrong when he said that the music of Mendelssohn and Mahler sounding Jewish.
Meyerbeer.
It was not so wrong when he said that the music of Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer sounds Jewish. In a way, it is, only for one reason. For the language, the German that Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer spoke is not exactly German, it's Yiddish. And the language that one uses to speak completely influences the way that he is composing music.
I have a couple of... First, I thought Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer spoke normal German, not Yiddish.
Well, they did, but they heard something else in their home, and they heard something else in their family. I mean, you should not forget that also Mendelssohn's family is not completely baptized or something, and they still have some cousins and uncles speaking Yiddish. The same with Meyerbeer. Exactly the same.
Okay, but...
They're influenced by the language. Barenboim used to speak about it a lot, that if you're listening to French music or to German music and you're trying to find some differences between the structure of the piece, you will find them easily by the language, but not by the other stuff. The language means a lot. If you are saying one sentence in German or in Italian or in French, you will hear something in the intonation of the sentence, like I will say in Germany, ich liebe dich, and I will say in French, je t'aime, and I will say in Italian, how is it in Italian? Amore. You say in Italian, amore. Yeah. It's three different stuff, you know? You cannot compose them the same. I mean, imagine for yourself an accord for amore, or for je t'aime, or for ich liebe dich. It's different. And this way, music is influenced by languages. The first thing I learned in Germany as a horn player from my professor, Professor Christian Friedrich Thalmann, which also helped me a lot to learn more about Wagner and Mendelssohn and music philosophy and history. He told me immediately, when I want to play a phrase of Mozart in Germany in a way that German listeners can understand it, is to play it like a German sentence. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's the intonation, it's the cutting of the language, it's the way you are bringing a word ich and not hich. You know?
Crazy.
Yeah. Amazing. It's the way a phrase is being, I mean...
So Mozart's melodies are the way German people speak, in a way?
In a way, if you... I mean, we're speaking now about French horn player in an orchestra in Germany, wanting to get a position in the orchestra and to have a successful audition, the way he has to approach a melody of Mozart has to do something, or has to do much, with the way the German language is going, because it's a German orchestra, it's a German phrase, it's a German culture. And this is something that Wagner succeeded to create in his music. The usage of the German language as a text of the opera and as a whole story is being described just with listening to the music.
So the German language is encoded in the music of,
absolutely,
of Wagner.
Absolutely.
And not in Mendelssohn or...
No, not Meyerbeer. Really. Not okay. Really. They both... I mean, also Meyerbeer and also Mendelssohn worked so much in Italy. And Wagner just... Okay, he also worked some in Paris, of course. But his main work and later works of his life were just German, and making Bayreuth great, making it the Mecca of the Germans... It's almost as sacrificing, like the Germans went to Bayreuth with such a Leidenschaft, you know.
At the end of his book, Wagner comes up with a solution for the Jews in Europe. Wagner refuses to admit anything positive or respectable about Jewishness. He even takes a moment to disparage Heinrich Heine, writing that with him, German poetry became a lie. Heine, we should note, was a German Jewish poet so revered that even the Nazis still chose to keep his poems in German textbooks, albeit attributing them to an anonymous writer. In any case, Wagner's solution is that Jews must simply stop being Jewish. But it's not enough for them merely to convert. Rather, they must suffer through this conversion to Christianity. They need to essentially destroy themselves and root out anything Jewish within them. It's ambiguous whether Wagner thinks they should all just die or instead self-flagellate. The final sentence reads, quote, "Only one thing can redeem you from the burden of your curse, the redemption of Ahasuerus, going under." Ahasuerus, we remember, was the Persian king of the Purim story, who had the opportunity to extinguish all of the Jews, and yet chose, in the end, due to the influence of Mordecai and Esther, to save them. Wagner, it seems, wishes the Purim story had turned out differently, and thus wants to give Ahasuerus a second chance at redemption. Thank you.
not only diminished chords and chromatic scales in the same time. It's also the Dresdner Amen, which is a very, very famous motif from his operas that he also took from Mendelssohn, so inspired by Meyerbeer. I mean...
But how could he have taken everything from them when his music sounds so much different? Just because he spoke German? I mean...
No, of course not. He's coming from the family that working on drama and like... He's coming from the world of dramaturgy and theater into the world of music.
Okay.
He's learning how to create wonderful music from Mendelssohn, Meyerbeer, and of course many other composers. And he finds his own and unique style, which no one else has in the world. Much later, Wagner created atonality in his music in a way that many people can enjoy it. Of course, atonality is a hard theme till today, so not everyone likes Wagner. For some people, it's just amazing, and then it's again very, very, very hard to listen. And for me, well, from speaking from my own experience, when I discovered the music of Wagner, I was 15 years old, and I just fell in love. I couldn't stop to listen to that. I were listening to this day and night, and the reason I liked it so much is the Germanity included in this as a motif, you know, this amazing heroic movement of the music inspired me so much. It gave me so much energy. When you listen to the overture of Die Meistersinger, you are hearing an amazing heroic movement in the music. One couldn't describe it without listening to this music. Music has its own power, and Wagner had words, amazing usage of words in his operas, so inspired by the words creating such a music.
Today in Germany, any display of nationalism falls somewhere in between a faux pas and verboten. One could fly the German flag in front of one's home, but only if he or she wishes to become a pariah. One could whistle the formal national anthem of Deutschland über alles, or employ the word Führer, but one would risk social banishment. Of course, other actions like owning the book Mein Kampf or drawing a swastika or doing the Heil Hitler salute are actually against the law. Wagner, however, wrote music during an era long before German national shame. He died in 1883, 6 years before Hitler was even born. In Wagner's time, it was, indeed, cool to be German. Germanists should be paraded, celebrated, embraced. How times have changed. Why did Germans so badly once let the whole world know that they were German? One theory is that it goes back to the 30 Years' War between 1618 and 1648. In this war, major European powers fought it out on German soil. There was no Germany at this time, just a collection of city-states in which some dialect of German was the spoken language. As powers like France and Sweden and Austria fought bloody battles on the German lands, Germans were the innocent bystanders. They were like sitting ducks, slaughtered by the armies as they raged through the villages. One third of the entire population of Germany was killed in this war. In the 18th century, a similar dynamic occurred. France reigned over Europe under Louis XIV, and Germany was just next door, waiting to be routinely plundered. Naturally, Germany, not even a real country yet, had no chance to fight back against the Sun King. By Wagner's time, Germany had a chip on its shoulder. But for the first time since the Middle Ages, Germany now had the power to fight back. The Industrial Revolution and German unification in 1871 had turned Germany into, of course, a single nation state with a disciplined, well-oiled army based in the northeast, in Prussia. Wagner was born at the absolute perfect time to ride that wave. And he did. this is maybe an obvious question, but if Wagner could write such incredible music, why did he feel the need to make Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer like look bad? Didn't he have enough confidence in his music
he just won't have any success. He won't have any success as long as the German audience still remain on Mendelssohn and Meyerbeer. Mm. Who is Richard Wagner?
Mm. Interesting.
Of course.
Okay, so let's... Oh, okay, most important. How do you feel as Jews when we listen to... Should we feel guilty about listening to Wagner? Or... And also, I know in Israel, I think he's... Well, let's take one question at a time. Like,
we're speaking about the taboo now. We are speaking now about the taboo of Wagner in Israel. I know a lot about the theme.
Let's just
first...
I did
my bachelor work about it.
Well, maybe I just want to ask before we get to Israel, because I think it's a separate question. Like, just as Jews, as a Jewish dude just sitting at home,
yeah,
enjoying Wagner, is that something that we should feel guilty about, or we should not do, or is that a guilty pleasure?
Wow. Yes, it is. It is.
It's a guilty pleasure.
It's a guilty pleasure, but you know, it's
why
it, you're enjoying it like making a scene, Zünde.
It's the same.
It's the same feel for me. Yes, because I know what usage of the music has been done later. I know which ideas the man has in the time of composing his music. Well, he didn't transform these ideas into music, but he had these ideas in his mind. He kept it in mind, and yeah, it's a guilty pleasure to listen to this music, and it feels like doing some scene for me.
Do you think we should stop listening as Jews?
In a way.
Really?
In a way.
Why?
It's a very hard question, but in a way. Because if you are historically checking the connection between Wagner and Hitler, you will find so many direct connections that you won't even believe it. And therefore, we don't even know it. We just think about the Holocaust and, okay, there was playing some marches and music of Wagner. Unfortunately, to the Jews that were led to the gas. But this is nothing. The Wagner family was so strongly connected with Hitler. And I'm not speaking about the later grandchildren and grandchildren. I am speaking about his wife, Cosima. Cosima was connected with Hitler personally.
If we describe Wagner's music, we almost simultaneously describe how Germans wished to see themselves at that time. The music is heroic, proud, loud, mysterious, intimidating, militant, and godly. This is not music for sissies. This is not music for everyone. The Germanness, which German hypernationalists like Bismarck and Kaiser Wilhelm II, as well as Hitler and Goebbels, wished to project, is encapsulated in Wagner's music. Wagner's choice of stories was also, for lack of a better word, German. The operas center on Germanic knights from the Middle Ages who embody the German virtues just mentioned. No wonder that Hitler counted Wagner as his favorite composer. Even the way in which German is enunciated by the opera singers is also highly nationalistic. Each word of the German is emphasized, drawn out, accentuated, as if to make it sound as German, as Deutsch, as possible. ¶¶ I'm actually interested also in the music. Like, forget about Wagner, who wrote it. The music itself, as we talked about, has this very, like, Übermensch quality to it.
Absolutely.
This very... I would say that, I mean, would you say that the music itself is anti-Semitic? Or should we be ashamed?
No.
Should we be guilty to listen to the music itself? Like,
No. The music itself is amazing.
Okay.
The music itself is amazing. And I think it's so powerful. It gives you also such an energy when you are listening to the overture of the Meistersinger. It's like drinking 10 espressos. Yeah. You're feeling like an Übermensch.
Yeah.
So... You know, I have this, so I have such a thought already for some time. The Rabbi Melubavitch made the Napoleon hymn as a Chabad nigun because it has so much power. Wow. And the soldiers of Napoleon were singing it and going to the war, and because it gave them so much energy, the Rabbi Melubavitch decided to make this as a nigun for the Chabad Hasidic. So when they are wanting to spread Torah in the world, they are singing this song and they are getting the power to battle for God. And wouldn't be a great idea to do it with the Meistersinger of Wagner? It gives you the feeling of an Übermensch. It's amazing. It's a feeling that I can barely paralleling with another music. It's amazing, yeah.
Okay. And what about in Israel? I think there are some laws about playing Wagner in Israel. Can you say about that and what you think about these rules? Like, should Israeli orchestras be able to play Wagner, or should they be able to listen to Wagner on the radio? What do you think about that?
I don't think so. I'm very sorry for some disappointments about it, but also making a bachelor work about it and really going deep in the material. There are some things one should never forget about the connectivity between Wagner and Hitler. And in the time that the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, at the time, of course, under another name, Palestina, started to give concerts. Of course, they wanted to play Wagner. And Toscanini came, the conductor, and said, "Are you crazy? You don't know what is going on the other side? You want to play Wagner at the time that the family Wagner hosting Hitler to write Mein Kampf? No, you cannot do it." So this stays, this remains. And okay, then also having the music of Wagner in the same time the Jewish are going to the Gaz, everyone knows about it. This is not new, but the real connectivity with Hitler, this is the important thing here, not the usage that the Nazis did from his music. This is not important. The important here is the connectivity, the direct connectivity between Hitler and the family of Richard Wagner. And therefore, I actually believe that there should not be place for his music in Israel. You know, Israel is a country which is not very safe. Having now 7th of October, I can say that, for my opinion, Zionismus should be redefined, because without any Zionismus we will not have any land as well. So giving a stage to anti-Semitic artists is not a very good idea, in my opinion. And I appreciate the music of Wagner being played in Europe. I don't think that it has anything to do with Israel. I'm playing Wagner in Europe and I am enjoying it very much. I wouldn't be so happy to do the same in Israel, because it gets a completely different meaning.
Well, okay. Fascinating.
What would you write in the biography of Wagner playing it in Israel? You know, you're having a composer in the program of a symphony concert, so you are writing wonderful things about Mozart, his childhood, what he wrote, you know. Or Robert Schumann, he wrote also some articles. Yeah, you have wonderful things to write about these people. Then you're writing about Richard Wagner, was financially supported by Meyerbeer, and later writing against him and Mendelssohn, a disgusting article. Who would like to read this program? This is disgusting. That doesn't have to get any place in Israel, from my opinion.
How is it that somebody whose soul was so obviously I would say pretty evil or just mean and so much kind of negative energy, how is someone like that capable of writing such, in your opinion as a musician, of writing such like moving, incredible music?
I would separate negativity thoughts and poisoned passion. I think that he had something more like poisoned passion, and that have nothing to do with negative energies. It's just passion which is poisoned, that's all. But the passion is there, the talent is there, everything is there. He had a great life then, you know, being of course a great anti-Semite, but a wonderful family, great house, villa. He was composing the Siegfried Idyll for his new son Siegfried, played by an orchestra in his villa. Some wonderful stories. I mean, yeah, he was not sitting all the time and writing bad things about Jews. It was just the tool to get known as a composer with a statement.
Do Germans, in your experience, have Germans felt similarly to you about playing Wagner in Israel, or differently?
Of course that there is a conversation about playing Wagner in Israel or not with German musicians and philosophers and professors. But for instance, Wagner is very important for the Germans because he made German nationality being into music. It's hard to make such a idea into music, you know, and he made it actually in a very good way. He didn't mean to do it in a bad way or something. It just gave the German something to be really, really proud about. A fantastic music written by a composer which his, you know, human side is not very beautiful for, not also for Germans. I'm sure no one German is proud about the article of Wagner blaming the Jews for being unmusical, but his music is fantastic and it's a very, very, very German proudness to continue to play Wagner, to go to Bayreuth to listen to the operas in the Villa Wagner, in the wonderful and very, very special hall. So, yeah, it's, I mean...
But what about, how do they, have you, when you, if you, have you ever told Germans, or German musicians, hey, I don't think Wagner should be played in Israel? Like, how do they react to that?
Sure, so my experience is great because just gave my bachelor work, and after I get a nice note of Heinz Kommanul, they asked me a personal question. Do I think that we Israelis should play Wagner in Israel? And I answered honestly, And I saw some disappointment in their eyes. They answered honestly, no. I'm a bit disappointed from my answer as well, because I like the music of Wagner very deeply, and in a way it could be my second favorite composer in the world, really.
Who's with your favorite?
With Hand of My Heart.
Who's your favorite composer?
Anton Bruckner. Anton Bruckner is my favorite composer.
On the Schrift, I briefly noted a similarity between the Austrian composer Gustav Mahler and Moshe Rabbeinu. Mahler, I argued, took the best out of Mendelssohn's and Wagner's worlds. Unlike Mendelssohn, Mahler was willing to let his music sound Jewish. Yet Mahler's music also embodies the same exuberant German energy found in Wagner's works. In the Parsha of Yitro, we saw that Moshe was happy to take advice from non-Hebrews, such as his father-in-law, Yitro. In the desert, Moshe received a visit from Yitro, and Yitro noticed that Moshe had not hired enough judges to settle disputes between the children of Israel. In turn, Moshe was overtasked with judging this long list of cases on his own. Although Yitro was from Midian, and hence not an Israeli, Moshe graciously took his advice to hire lower court judges to settle disputes. Mahler, like Moshe, drew upon an array of influences when he sat down to work. And for this reason alone, Mahler's music is far more refreshing and free than is Mendelssohn's or Wagner's. Opinion.
So, I don't think that Mahler found a perfect balance or something like this. Mahler was just much more related to his father and his family. And as I told you, Karl Blessinger was the anti-Semitic Musikwissenschaftler, told that he was like exaggerating his Judaism. But that's not exactly true. He was just Jew till the end of his life. The only thing...
Mahler
is
he
just...
He converted, though.
He just converted. That's all. It's not so much,
Okay.
He converted because he wanted to get the position as Kapellmeister in Vienna, which is the most important position in Europe for a conductor. And of course, he has to be a Christian to get this Anstellung. But that's the only thing he changed. He's coming from a family of very, very traditional rabbiners and chazanim, and they were listening in the synagogue to all these melodies, and he got inspired by this great music, which he listened in the synagogue to, then to write very, very special music.
Every time I say it's my last question, then I have more questions. First, just curious, I actually remember I went to a lecture once with a Wagner biographer, and I asked him, this was many years ago, he gave a lecture and I went up to him and said, what would Wagner have thought about the Holocaust? And he said he would have actually been horrified by that. Wagner would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that he had friends that were Jewish. I mean, we can't obviously know what Wagner... Do you have a sense of, how Wagner would have felt about, Jews just being mass murdered?
You know, there are some philosophical questions that I just would never take challenge to answer on them. I don't want to think about it. I just don't want to think about it. And for me, it's enough the connectivity with the Hitler family to provide a good reason for not playing the music in Israel. I wouldn't, I would never connect the person Richard Wagner having something to do with the Holocaust, but his wife and his children and his grandchildren, Wieland Wagner, the son of Siegfried, the grandson of Richard Wagner, had himself, he got from Hitler, a concentration camp in Bayreuth. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not really fair to Wagner to speculate as to what he would have thought about something that he wasn't even alive for, so.
Exactly.
In which of these three composers would a shofar best fit, do you think?
In the music of Mahler. Because Mahler used some instrument from the orchestra in a unique way to connect them with the sounds that he knows from the synagogue. For example, the clarinet. Mahler uses the clarinet in the Third Symphony of Mahler as a klezmer clarinet in a very funny way and actually in a very sincere way, you know? So, well, if Mahler would have known that you can play melodies on the shofar, or maybe if I would have the honor to work with Mahler in his life, well, I could imagine that there will be some shofar in one of his symphonies, or maybe even solo for shofar. Thank you so much for interviewing me about all of these themes.
Yeah, Bar, it was such a honor and a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for being on The Shrift.
Thank you so much.
We've come a long way since Wagner and Mendelssohn. When Wagner wrote Jewishness and Music, there was no State of Israel, no, or very few, Philo-Semitic Germans, and certainly no shofars in the Berlin Symphony Halls. When Bart Semach came to the gates of Berlin a few years ago with his shofar in hand, was he at last redeeming the original sin of Moses Mendelssohn, who stood at Rosenthaler Tor in 1739 with his Yiddish to German dictionary? Say what you will about him, Wagner created music which, a century and a half ago, made Germans feel very cool, very badass, very übermenschlich, and certainly very patriotic about being German. There is absolutely no irony in this music, no self-awareness that maybe this music was, well, a bit much. It would take Friedrich Nietzsche to observe that. Similarly, American rap music thrives on chest thumping, and all too often it remains unaware of itself, fully embracing its own narcissism. The truly best rappers, the best of the best, are at once self-aggrandizing as well as self-aware. And in Germany? Today, Germany has Rammstein, which, like Mahler, takes the best of both worlds. On one hand, Rammstein's music embodies the hyper-Germanness which made Wagner's music so seductive. On the other hand, it remains self-aware, always ready to simultaneously mock and extol Wagnerian Germanness, which in the end is really just to mock it. I am no fan of contemporary German music, at all. But when we draw a line from Wagner to Rammstein, we can't deny that German music has, like German society, also grown up. Thank you.
Amazing.